This is The Producers, a podcast. The biggest names in audio production, station sound, radio imaging, branding, and voiceover. Interviews, tips, tricks, advice. To be a part of the show, visit RyanOnTheRadio.com. Now, The Producers with Ryan Dreen.
Thanks so much for being here. John Carter, the guest, coming up in moments. I decided, for really no good reason, just to leave this one long part. I haven't had anybody ever tell me, hey, we really want it in multiple parts, or hey, make it one part, a-hole, or I'm not listening. Nobody's ever said anything either way, so I'll make this one long part and see if people enjoy it more. One less button to click or file to download, I guess. Anyway, I will point out right out of the gate, the show notes page is jam-packed with content. A lot of audio, some more demos, but also there'll be a couple things you hear about in the interview you may not be aware of. Something free John Carter offers. I mentioned it on my website a long time ago, but, you know, you may not give a crap about my website, just the podcast. So anyway, you'll learn about that, and you'll see links about that on the show notes page. Also, something very recent that John had his hands and his voice in, not a voice over, perchance. Anyway, check out the show notes page. You'll hear more about that there. And, of course, more videos and demos and all sorts of cool stuff from John. I will mention, just briefly, upcoming guest, Cousin Deke, still on deck. You know, a lot of happenings here locally in Dallas with Kid Craddock passing. That put a lot of extra work on Cousin Deke's plate, so I backed off of him for a little while. But we are going to do an in-person interview, since we are in the same town, and I never get to do in-studio interviews with anyone. We will get that worked out very soon. And then, you know, plenty of other guests. I stopped trying to promote them too much in advance because, you know, schedules are tough to wire up. And so I'll try and give you at least a month or two notice. But that's all I got for now, for sure. On the website, I will make note a couple things. I'm doing, you know, more 9.5 questions interviews from time to time. Get you in studio with some other people that I either haven't had time to get on as a podcast guest, but intend to, or just people that just don't have the time, or for whatever reason, it's a small topic, so we'll do it on the blog. For example, just recently, I caught up with George Whittam. I was on his EWABS pod, him and Dan Leonard doing EWABS podcast and video cast. It was a lot of fun. Thanks to them for having me. But George, who's kind of the engineer to the voiceover community, the go-to guy, he's merged his forces with the folks at Edge Studio. There's a story on that, but also I grabbed a whole bunch of information out of George that will be really helpful for voice talents. For example, one question is, if you're looking for a microphone in the, you know, sub $500 range, we go into a few different options and some really quality hardware there. That's just an example of some of the information I yanked out of him. Anyway, so check out the blog from time to time. There's a little subscription button on the website there somewhere. And podcast is right next to that. So everything's at RyanOnTheRadio.com. I think, oh, you know what else I was going to mention? A shameless plug. Really, it isn't a big deal, but I'm trying to put more audio on SoundCloud. So if you would like to go be my friend on SoundCloud, whatever it is you are on SoundCloud, what do you add each other? You like each other? I can't remember what it is. But anyway, I'm on there. I'm putting up some more audio here and there. And it's soundcloud.com/rdreen, I think. Just do it Ryan Dreen. I've got to be the only one. I will also make reference that if you like free audio, I've started, I operate a service called 360 Country over here at TM Studios. I love it. We have lots of clients now and everybody's happy and it's a lot of fun. It's something I've always wanted to do. It's a blast. Anyway, I'm putting free audio every single week from the service up there. I might put full-blown custom music themes that are pretty amazing tracks that we cut with a 7-piece band once a month. From time to time, I'll put some of those cuts up there, free and clear. Use them as you want. Also, some artist audio, sound design eventually I'll do, whatever else. So 360 Country on SoundCloud. I'll go ahead and put links to that in the on this podcast page on my site as well. But anyway, just go look on SoundCloud if you're there. Next time you're there, pop on over and say hi and add me and I'll add you back or whatever it is you do there. Okay, enough yapping for the intro. Let's make with the interview. First, we'll hear some cool audio from John Carter so you can be reminded of what the guy sounds like. And then we'll hear the interview in one part right here on the Producers Podcast.
105.7 Kiss FM.
Faster.
Hit music now.
Now. Go ahead when you're ready.
Hey, log on now. 1057kissfm.com. Listen live. Check out Kiss FM photos. Hit our DJs with email. And connect with the showgram. 1057kissfm.com.
Welcome.
Hit music now.
Online.
Online. Charlotte's number one country. Right. 103.7. WSOC.
At Shoney's, we believe an appetite is a terrible thing to waste. Much like that long-awaited tax return or that extra ticket to the big game. Opportunities like this don't come around often, my friend.
Summer's just up the road, so be prepared to enjoy it to the fullest when you lease a 2007 Volkswagen Beetle convertible, just $229 a month. Get a new car today. See dealer for all the details.
Live with tonight's top stories and tomorrow morning's forecast in the first 10 minutes, this is 7 on your side at 10. Channel 10 News is the first and only local news in high definition. Experience a clear picture, sharper detail, with or without an HD set. We're changing the way you watch local news. Another first from your local news leader, Channel 10 News.
In one of the most barren places on the planet, a seed of peace and hope is being planted. Every day, a fight for freedom rages on.
And so thankful to be joined by the one and only John Carter. First, John, let me just say thank you for your time. I know you're a busy man. I appreciate you joining me on the podcast.
Oh, no problem. It's really an honor to be on your podcast.
Right on. Now, we heard a little sample there of who you are. I would say, I mean, we'll dive a lot more into your full-blown professional career here in a bit.
Okay.
But are you basically 100% voice guy now? Pretty much all the time voice?
I'm full-time doing voiceovers now, but I still do a little bit of production. I like doing imaging production for radio and stuff like that, and I do some commercial production as well. So occasionally I still do some of that, but I would say about 95-96% all voiceover at this point.
As far as the production side of things, I mean, you have that background, we'll talk about it, but
okay.
Is this things you're making income from, or is this because you just like it and it's hobby type stuff?
Well, a lot of it is kind of value added kind of stuff. Some of it is part of my service for radio stations. And also it kind of gets a little scattered here, but like with commercial stuff, sometimes they need a spot fully produced. So sometimes I'll do that as well, but I also have a couple of producers that I work with that handle a lot of that stuff for me. So I kind of have a few different options there, which is nice.
Yeah, cool. All right. So real quick, I hate to go around the guest's background, but sometimes it gets lengthy. But did you start in the audio business at a single radio station? Or tell me a little bit about where you started out in this career field.
Okay. Yeah. Actually, I kind of got into audio and editing and stuff like that, if you want to call it that. Back when I was like 15, I started buying like really crude, crappy equipment and trying to make this little recording studio back then. So I did that for a while and got into music and drum machines and specifically hip hop music and rap music. Back when I was really young, I started producing that kind of stuff. And then that kind of led me to radio about 2 years after that. I met a couple of people that worked for a couple of different R&B radio stations, like hip hop and R&B radio stations back then. And long story short, I had a little rap group back then that I was working on. We connected with a producer in Fayetteville who worked at a radio station. After kind of connecting with him and trying to get a record deal, I kind of got the radio bug at that point after going to the radio station and experiencing stuff there and just seeing what they do. Behind the scenes at that age was extremely exciting for me. So I already had the audio bug at that point, and then I got the radio bug. And so around 17 or so, I found this tiny little radio station about 18 miles from my home in Carthage, North Carolina. And I got a part-time job on an AM country station, which was, to me back then, was huge. Mm-hmm. So I had to go in and basically, to be on the air, I had to go in there and read a script in the studio. And this was back in the days of reel-to-reel machines and all that. So the PD put me in this room and turned on the reel-to-reel machine and said, here you go, here's some copy. And I literally just butchered the copy. I sounded terrible. It was horrible. And he comes back and he's like, I think you have some potential. And so he gave me the job. But it was just a part-time gig, basically running these syndicated shows like Gospel Greats and MR and like mm-hmm. racing radio back then. And also I got to read the obituaries, which was pretty cool, you know, at that age, at 17. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of how I got into radio, long story, kind of condensed for you there.
So you stayed inside the, you know, brick and mortar radio station for how many years?
In radio in general or?
Yeah, in general, not that stage, but I'm just in general. How long did you actually stay working inside of a station?
Okay, yeah, I worked there for probably a year or so. Went to college. I worked at a few college radio stations there. Then I got a job at my first part-time gig at a 100,000 watt FM station in Greensboro when I went to college there. So I kind of did all that during college. And then I was really lucky, like right after college, I got a full-time gig for a radio station in Greensboro. At that time, they were actually AC at that time, then they turned hot AC and then CHR. But I ended up staying there for quite a while because it was for Dick Broadcasting and really a great locally owned company, great people working there, and a really, really, really good time for radio in general, you know, at that time.
Yeah. So what era are we talking about? Just to give people an idea.
I started there. Let me see. Let me think back here. Started around 1993.
Okay.
And at this full-time gig. Now, at that point, I was basically, you know, just graduating college, and they kind of created a position there for me because they knew I could do some production and had, you know, some decent creative chops, so to speak. And so they created a swing utility position for me there. So basically, I was on call, you know, for the radio station. So did that for a while and then kind of moved up the ladder, you know, to middays, to afternoons. And then I did a lot of commercial production, imaging production. And I stayed there for a pretty long time. I actually left that job in 2006. So unlike a lot of people in radio that move all over the place and go, you know, jump from one job to the other, I got with a really, really good company, and I stayed there. You know, it just made sense to me at that time.
Yeah.
And it was a really, really good experience.
And what was the reason that you finally left in 2006?
In 2006, well, I started the company Megahertz Studios. I started that around 1999, 2000. And what I did was I overlapped the two. And that's another thing that was really good about that job. It was extremely flexible, so I could leave. You know, I could leave the radio station. I lived like two blocks away downtown. So I could run over to my place, my studio, knock out some jobs for my clients there, and then go back to the station. And so all day long, I was going, like for years, I was going back and forth, you know, all the time. So it was really flexible and really comfortable for me then. But I overlapped those two for about 6 or 7 years. And so in 2006, I decided, you know, it's kind of a no-brainer at this point to go ahead and go full-time and pursue, you know, doing more voiceovers and expand beyond just radio and stuff like that. It just made sense to me at that point. So in 2006, that's when I left.
Okay. And you transitioned basically from your radio station job to full-time on your own business doing voiceover and production.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. I know a lot of people, I get emails all the time from people asking about, you know, how do you do that? Or when do you know it's right? And I've brought that up in the past. But for you, it sounds like at least monetarily, you realized, hey, I can live on my business, so let's go full bore with it.
Yeah, and like I said, I overlapped the two for a while, so I really developed a comfort zone in, you know, with my business. I had time. So for somebody jumping out of radio with no, you know, and they haven't had time to build a voiceover career, that's an extremely scary thing to do, you know. And I know a lot of people that are trying to do that right now, but I did have the luxury of kind of doing the two for a while and overlapping that, which was a huge factor for me. And then it made that transition easier for me. And also I really, like with the voiceover stuff, I really in the very beginning focused on radio because it was in my DNA at that point. I've been doing it for so long. And so I kind of focused on that for years. And then in 2006, it's funny, like when you transition from radio to doing voiceovers and you start expanding into other parts of the voiceover industry, the first thing you hear is like, please don't sound radio, you know, so.
Yeah.
And I've been doing radio for like, since I was like 17 or whatever. So I'm like, I'm not really sure how to do that. So you have to kind of you have to train a lot and work hard on kind of getting more versatile to do that, you know.
Since you brought it up, I've brought that up in the past many times here on the podcast. Lots of people talk about it, but it is pretty much the number one rule. If you want to do voiceover, don't sound like you work or have ever worked in a radio station. Mm-hmm. What were some of the biggest things that helped you accomplish that, or at least remove some of that stench from your voice that radio creates?
Stench? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Radio stench? That's funny. For me, I just worked on it. You know, I practiced a whole lot.
Give me more practiced, as in, did you find somebody that you find people you heard that were awesome and you
great,
emulate
yeah.
or, yeah.
Great point. Exactly. I knew a lot of people in the industry at that point, and I built up a lot of relationships. And so you find good people that want to help you, that you trust and that you respect. And these people can do a lot for you, you know? And so I sent my demos out to a lot of people and just kind of took a hard look at it and just started working on that and trying to focus on that as much as possible. And thankfully, I got some good opportunities and it felt like a natural transition from one to the other. Mm-hmm. Thank God, you know, because if it weren't, you know, I may not be doing this or whatever, but I did, you know, I really did work on it. I focused on that a lot, did a lot of research, read a lot of books on voiceovers. And that's something I always tell people, if they email me asking like advice, you know, there's so many good resources online. There are great coaches out there that can help you. And thankfully I had a lot of friends that were coaches for me, which was really big. So I just try to take it on from every angle, you know, just to get better. Mm-hmm. And it took some time. You know, there were a few occasions where I had a job, you know, I was offered a job to do like a commercial or narration or something like that. And, you know, during that transition, and I just felt like I wasn't good. I wasn't giving them what they were asking me to do, you know, in terms of sounding more conversational, more relaxed or whatever. So, you know, and I'm pretty critical of my work, and to this day, I'm still that way. So it's always a work in progress, and you're just always trying to get better, basically.
Yeah, whenever I get I don't know if I didn't make it clear yet in the interview. I've made it clear in the past on my blog, and I'm sure I will have written it into the intro, but I really respect you and your sound. So, you know, there's a compliment for you.
Well,
but
thanks. I appreciate that.
You're one of those people for me, I think. You know, I've listened to your stuff a lot, and I used to be pukey radio guy, for sure, way pukey radio guy.
Can you do your pukey voice? Can you still do it?
No, I won't. I'm afraid it's like holding a bad face. I'm afraid if I do it, maybe it'll stick and then I will never get rid of it.
Okay, I got you.
to go beyond that, you transitioned away from radio. You got into the world of commercial narration, as you said. But how much radio work were you still doing? And I mean more like radio imaging or work for radio clients that you had that still wanted that guy, that radio sound.
That's a really good question. In 2006, when I left radio, I would say, just guessing, gosh, like 70% of what I was doing was still radio imaging, you know, at that point.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, the transition didn't take a long time to really get into other areas because I was pretty aggressive about it, and I, you know, did a lot of marketing and I worked hard. But I would say then, you know, a lot of clients still wanted that, and to this day, still clients want a certain type of read that sounds, you know, more radio. Which is I love doing that stuff. I love it. You know,
it can be fun.
Yeah, it is fun. It's a lot of fun. But if I sound too much like this, that's a problem. You know, and one thing about the puker voice that cracks me up is like people in radio love that and they think it's funny, but people that don't work in radio hate it outside of the agencies and people, just people in general. When they hear the puker voice, it makes their skin crawl, you know, but it's a radio thing and I love that. But, but anyway, so hopefully that answers your question there.
You just give us an idea before I get more into depth of what you do. How much of your work is still radio imaging VO, and then versus your commercial work, and then maybe versus television promo or narration and industrial stuff?
Okay. I would say at this point I'm working with about 60, 65 radio and TV stations. And I would say radio is probably, I'm having to take a guess here, but I would say radio is probably 40%, 45%. TV is probably 25%. And and then the other, and I'm really guessing here, and then the rest of it is like narration, commercial. In the past couple of years, though, the commercial stuff and the narration stuff has grown a lot, you know, and I see a lot of growth there, you know, just project work, you know. But a lot of stuff I do is still retainer for TV and radio. And again, I love doing that stuff. So that's one of the cool things, I think, you know, once you get out there on your own, you're doing so many different types of jobs. I really like that. You know, I know some people try to specialize just on narration or just on promo stuff. And that's really good because that simplicity is really easy to market. It's really easy to grow if you're really good at it. But I like being able to do a lot of different types of projects. So I think that really serves me well personally.
Have you noticed any... You've been voicing radio stations now for quite a while. And like you just said, radio and TV, you've got north of 60 stations. That's a very good amount.
Thanks.
Speak in terms of, have you lost clients, gained clients, and why? Or have you noticed trends in the way? Well, actually, you know what? Let's start there, and then I want to go into a different side of it.
But okay.
Tell me some trends about that.
Okay, for radio, I would say my client turnover has been... It's been really good, and I still have a lot of clients I've had for seriously for a long time, so I'm extremely grateful for that. You know, to me, that's really cool. But I would say one trend I'm noticing in radio is people. I think that a lot of stations are really trying to connect more with listeners, and they're trying to do it, you know, in less time, and you know, quicker in and out, and keep the music going or whatever. So I think that they're looking for something that's more authentic, a little more real than it used to be. You know, again, kind of getting away from the radio sound a little bit, you know, the classic radio sound. So I've heard that a lot. And thankfully, I feel like I've been moving in that direction anyway. So I think that's kind of worked out well for me so far. In terms of TV, let me think. I would say... For me, you know, I'm not your typical, you know, tonight on News 5 kind of guy with the, you know, the that sounds like he's older or whatever. So I've noticed that a lot of my clients are looking for somebody that sounds kind of younger and fresher and more relatable. And hopefully it continues to go that way because I like doing that, you know, I like doing that kind of work. So that's another thing that I've noticed in TV.
But have you been, you know, sort of steadily growing that? Have you noticed some stations dropping off that either can't afford you anymore, which was the other side of it I was going to talk about, the money side. But, you know, financially, what kind of trends have you noticed on that side of the business?
I mean, I do think people are a lot more mindful of budgets. And you know, I have lost some clients over the past, you know, 3 or 4 years due to changes in budget and, you know, various issues. So I do see some of that going on. But like I said, in general, things have been pretty consistent for me. You know, and I think a lot of that goes back to how much marketing you're doing and how, you know, just making sure that you're out there so you're available to new opportunities as well, you know, because things are going to constantly change in radio. And sometimes people, as you know, they just change because like, hey, it's time for a change, you know. So it could be the budget, or it could just be time for a change, or they could be a new program. And one of the biggest things, like when a station, like when they bring in new people, a lot of times they want to change things out then too. And you know, there's so many different reasons for that.
And I did want to talk trends in marketing and such. Back in 06 was pretty much right before radio, I don't want to say collapsed, but it definitely started onto its downhill, you know, as far as the revenue that was coming in. Did you do things then to attain new clients that you either can't or don't do anymore? And tell me some other things that you've had to start doing that you never had to do back then.
That's a really, really great question. At that time, my thought process was, okay, we're about to go through this, or, you know, when it kind of, the bottom kind of dropped out in the economy and radio and everything. My first thought, I'd had a few decent years before that, you know, because I've been doing it for a while. My first impulse, my first thought was do more marketing, be more aggressive in terms of that, and just try to get the word out there more during that time, because, you know, things are going to come back around. And that's just how I think in a situation like that. So over time, it worked out well. And I did, I'm trying to remember the exact time frame here, but I did get a few opportunities, like, you know, Fresh in Chicago and New York and Washington, D.C., they kind of popped up during part of that time as well. So I had a few other opportunities that kind of helped kickstart me in that direction a little more during that time. So, you know, I had some good luck during that time as well.
And as far as getting these opportunities at these big stations, what do you think are the number you know, the top ways that a talent like yourself can at least be considered for these major station voice jobs?
Go ahead.
Are we talking, you know, agents? Just you, both, like, you know, go in that area as well.
I think there are a million different ways to do it. I do not have an agent at this point, and you know, I've had some offers in the past, and I've kind of held off on that, and things have gone well for me. You know, I like having my hands in a lot of different things. I like, you know, I like the business side of things as well as the creative side and the voiceover side and the music side and production. So I like to do a lot of different things. It really depends on the person, you know, and I think with an agent, if you find the right agent and you're at the right point in your career and you're really ready for that next level and things come together, that can be a big break for you there if they can kind of connect you with people. But for me personally, I just did a lot of marketing and I just reached out to a lot of people and I just tried to stay on top of that. And I think that's another thing that a lot of people, you know, some voiceover people may struggle with that because it has nothing to do with doing voiceovers, you know, and doing the thing that you love to do. It's,
yeah,
you know, and you have to want to do those things, I think, if you're gonna handle everything yourself.
It's interesting, though, because not a lot of talent, I would assume very, very few with as many stations. And you're on some pretty high caliber stations, too, would do it without having any sort of representation. Is that not weird?
I think it is. I think I am kind of weird, yes. No, but I think my situation may be, you know, I know other people that I know some people who have gotten a lot of opportunities and tried the agent thing, didn't like it. Other people love it. It just really comes down to the person and your own style, I think, in terms of running your business. But as far as the rule of thumb, it's kind of hard to say, you know, because I've seen it go both ways and, you know, with different voice talents out there. So I think you can do it either way. It just depends on, you know, depends on the individual and depends on how you take it on, you know.
I think it's exciting to hear. I mean, you know, there's people out there that are talented that aren't represented, and some of them may have the mindset of, oh, if only I had an agent, I'd get all the big jobs, you know.
Yeah, that's...
And then others are like, yeah, I had the big agent, and I got nothing out of that, you know.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, I think it just varies across the board. You know, I've known some people that signed on with an agent and kind of sat on the roster, you know, for a couple of years. And the thing is, you know, if you do get a good agent, you still have to do marketing. You still have to put yourself out there. So for me, either way, you have to constantly be seeking new opportunities, you know, and
yeah,
whether you have an agent, whether you don't have an agent, I just think that's the thing to do, you know, in terms of growing your career.
And actually, I've just been sort of speaking. I haven't been in generalities. I've been talking radio imaging, but you are represented on the commercial side of things, right?
No. Mm-mm.
So you're not represented on any side of the business.
That is correct.
Interesting. Okay, I actually thought we would go to the commercial side now, and you'd be like, "Yeah, I've got seven agents." You know.
Well, I am wired in with a lot of other companies and studios, and you know. But as far as an actual agent, no, I don't have one.
Now, do you find that you simply don't have the ability to even be considered for some of the more national commercial jobs because of that, or can you still? Is there a way to get yourself, you know, heard by the big agencies that are casting for the big union national stuff?
Yeah, I think a lot of those jobs are hard to get if you don't have an agent. So I think that's a natural progression at some point. If you, as a voice talent, you get to a point to where you're like, I want to take on more, I want to focus more, shrink my focus and focus more on opportunities like that. And I think that's a time when you go through the transition of getting an agent and going for those jobs, you know. But it just comes down to the person and the timing factor. In terms of pursuing those types of jobs. But I do think there are a lot of opportunities out there that you're just not going to get unless you are kind of wired in through some of these bigger agencies,
yeah,
in New York and Chicago and LA.
Yeah. It's interesting, though. Actually, to be honest, I'm a little surprised that I think I knew you weren't represented on the imaging side.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it's surprising. That's cool. How much, if you're not really getting gigs, or I should say auditions from agents, how much auditioning are you having to do in your career right now?
It kind of depends on, to be honest, it kind of depends on the workload, you know, my daily workload. When I have time, I do more auditions and, you know, I'm on some of the pay-to-play websites and, you know, I do auditions through there sometimes. And the thing is that growing a company on your own is kind of a cumulative thing, you know what I mean? So over the years, you develop more and more relationships with companies and studios and So you have people that just contact you out of the blue on a regular basis, say, hey, can you send me a read for this and we'll consider you for this job. So I have a lot of I have a lot of relationships like that, you know. So on any given day, I may get like 10 auditions in from various places, you know, and if it's a direct audition, I try to jump right on it, you know, just and get that done as quickly as possible. But again, you know, with the pay to play websites, I've had some good experiences on those, and I think they can be a very good experience, especially when people are trying to get into this. I think it gives you kind of an opportunity to really hone your skills and do some auditions and try to get some feedback and kind of feel that process out. But it can also be hit or miss, you know, and there are a lot of people going for the same opportunities on those websites. So it's, you know, it's kind of a different ball game.
I should probably clarify, and maybe I'll ask you another question. The pay-to-play sites you speak of, basically Voice123, Voices.com, those pretty much the two big ones. Are you talking about any other ones specifically?
Yeah, those two, and then Bodago, or I'm not sure if I'm even saying it right. Bodago, I'm on that one too, you know. And there are a bunch of them kind of popping up every day, but really. I think Voice123.com and Voices.com are the two primary ones, and they do, you know, they have a lot of clients, you know, that seek out stuff on those websites. So I think that's a good thing to do. And you know, it's something you should have as part of your approach. You know, it's a piece in the puzzle, you know?
Yeah. No, you should not go into VoiceOver and sign up for an account there and think, all right, my career is set.
Yeah.
Here we go. Let the work roll in.
and then you can retire in like a year and you're done forever.
Yeah, right. That's what we're all here for.
Yeah.
I brought up auditioning. I wanted to know if you have any pointers or tips on the audition process. I mean, do you generally kind of, you know, punch into the script, give it a couple minutes, knock out two takes and fire it off? Do you have any other tips as to good audition practices?
Yeah, I think the main thing to do is really, you know, read over the script first, kind of try to figure out the message in the script, figure out who they're talking to, what kind of sound they're looking for, you know, if they're looking for a conversational sound or a radio voice. I'm just kidding. But, you know, just try to figure out like what the focus.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, everybody. Try to figure out the focus of the actual spot, you know, and how you can deliver that message to the best of your ability. Because, you know, I still audition for jobs sometimes that I know that maybe they're not looking for someone just like me. But if I give them my best read on it, they may be like, wait a minute now, this is better than what we thought to begin with. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you just have to try to do your very best with each audition and put it out there and see what happens. And then after you do it and send it off, let it go and move on, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah, if I fire off auditions in Goo in my Gmail, I instantly archive those messages and forget they ever happened.
Yeah, and that's kind of like I think that's a good way to do it, you know? Just kind of focus on giving your best performance and then move on.
And again, I don't want you to give up any of your super inside secrets during this interview, but I will continue to ask you things, and then you can finally tell me, hey, man, I ain't answering that. But
that's okay.
Back to marketing. Now, I think we all generally know what marketing is, you know, tell people who and what you are and what you can do for them, that kind of thing. But aside from cold emailing, you know, production houses and I don't know who else, you know, any other tips on good practices to market yourself instead of just being a nuisance? Anything you can bring up that people might not have thought of?
Oh, gosh. I really, you know, I think that having a focused marketing campaign is big now, you know, online, being focused and kind of, you know, one thing I have a couple of different little side things I'm working on here. And one thing is a spot like commercials for car dealerships and things like that. And just having focused campaigns that you can really, it's more conducive to really good online marketing. But it really depends on the type of marketing you're doing. You know, get it depending on the industry that you're going to market to, because VoiceOver can be used for so many different types of things. You got to find out what you're good at and kind of focus on that, and then just try to tailor your marketing, you know, to the specific industry in which you're trying to get business. I'm trying to think to answer your question. You know, you have to That's okay. Go ahead.
An example, obviously, something you can't overlook, just because of how massive, you know, Google AdWords, mm-hmm. any form of marketing or advertising through Google. Have you utilized that? I'm assuming at some point you have, and how effective was or is that? And is there any specific ways to utilize that as a voice talent you know, not just as a company or a website?
Yeah, I think the better the business model is, I think the more conducive it is to specific advertising, like on Google and stuff like that. Because, you know, people are searching for specific things on there. And if you just type in voiceover, you get a bunch of ads. But, you know, are they going to check those out or not? Who knows? But I do that. I really try to just experiment with as many different types of marketing as possible. And I'm always trying to evolve that and just kind of find what works for me. And I think it's really going to vary. It's going to depend on the talent. It depends on what you have to offer, your services, your sound, and everything. So the best advice I can give really is just try to experiment and track it. And you know, a lot of marketing, you know, it's not gonna work for you in 6 months. It may take 2 or 3 years, you know, of doing hammering the mm-hmm. same thing. You know, and you just have to give things time and just kind of track it and stay on top of it. And I think any of the stuff that we're talking about can work, just depending on the talent and what they have to offer. But I never underestimate picking up the phone and calling people and, you know, sending out cards or just reaching out to people specifically. I think that can work a lot. And you're right. Mm-hmm. You do, like I've done that in the past many times, and I do feel like I'm being a nuisance when I call people up and say, hey, you know, just want to see if you'd like to check my demo out. You know, most people don't care. They're like, who are you? Take me off your list. But, you know, you sometimes in the very beginning, when I first started the company, I would try everything. I made notes of what worked, what didn't work. And I just try to stay on top of it and evolve the marketing as much as possible. And again, over the years, you start seeing what's really working, and it takes time. You know, there's no like magic marketing bullet or whatever, so to speak.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Generally, and this is probably going to be for people who haven't been working for years in the industry that might be more, you know, thinking about it or just getting started or have been doing the radio side of things forever. What are the big differences when you're doing work and in the industrial and narration side? And tell me, you know, the way you do the work, but also the types of work, how the quantity of work. Tell me about that side of the industry.
Okay. I would say for like narration stuff is a completely, again, it's like, you know, earlier we were talking about like making the transition from radio to doing commercial stuff and adjusting your read and learning from that. Narration is a whole nother animal. And that's something I'm kind of getting more and more into lately. You know, it's a different skill set, and you have to really work on that. And also, you know, you have to, well, I guess for people starting out, they need to find out where their natural skills are, you know, where they're most confident, or I've heard people call it your money read, you know, the one style that's going to get you the most opportunity, the one that you're most comfortable at, and you kind of branch out from there. But what was your question again, though, in terms of narration?
It was a terrible question.
No, it wasn't a bad question. I just forgot what it was.
it's a different side of the business. What are some of the major differences when you talk about that side? And also, you know, monetarily, you know, everything about it, is it a more lucrative, a less lucrative? Is there more jobs, less jobs? And, you know, what is the work like? It's kind of more marathon type work.
It is. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. It is more, the long form stuff is really more like a kind of a marathon approach, because I do some medical narrations from time to time. And, you know, you called me, I don't know, like 6 months ago about doing this. And when you called at that point, I was doing like 30 sessions a day total, 30, 35 sessions a day. And I had like 2 or 3 50 page medical narrations sitting here. So it's literally like, that's a ton of work. You know what I mean? And so the narration stuff is a different animal, and it takes more time than just a quick session for a commercial spot or for maybe a voiceover for a website or something like that. So, and it, like I said, it takes a different skill set. And just in terms of your voice, for promo and for radio, you know, for TV promo and radio stuff, you're reading from a different place physically. For narration, for me, this is going to sound funny, but it's something that kind of, it's more subtle and softer, and it comes from the front of your mouth. So and I know that sounds weird, but just in terms of doing voiceovers, learning the proper technique to do these different things is extremely important. Because again, it kind of goes back to, you know, if you're good at one thing, for example, with me coming out of radio, I was, you know, pretty good at that, you know, and then you're given a new opportunity, you have to find a way to, you know, to switch gears and learn the new terrain or whatever. And so for narration and industrial stuff, It's a completely a lot. And I know a lot of people that just don't do it. You know, they're like, I can't read 10 minutes straight. And these are people mm-hmm. that are can bust out like a commercial, you know, in their sleep or, you know, do some radio imaging or whatever. So it really just depends on the person. I personally like to do it. I like the challenge, like I said earlier, of doing different types of jobs. So I really, really like doing narration and also find it just kind of stretches me creatively, you know, and, you know, to learn how to do these different types of jobs. But it is a bigger time commitment in a lot of ways. A narration can wipe out a whole day, you know. If you're doing like a medical narration on like diabetes or something, it can take you 6 hours to get that thing done. So, you know, that's something to think about.
That makes me think of three things off that then. Voice preservation, you started to touch on it, I think. Do you have any tips, things that you do to make sure that your voice can go the long haul?
Well, I just try to drink a lot of water and I work out a lot, you know, work out pretty much every day. And, you know, I eat a really healthy diet for the most part. I have the occasional glass of wine, I'm not going to lie. I love coffee, which I'm not.
Are you drinking wine right now, John?
No, not yet. Not yet.
Okay.
You know, just basically overall health is really important. And also, you know, if you're lucky enough to be busy doing voiceovers, you want to just take care of your voice and take breaks and, you know, just pay attention, you know, to things, because it is a physical thing, you know. And also another thing, there are a lot of resources online, and I recommend these for anybody, you know, if you're just starting out, if you've been doing it, whatever. There are a lot of resources that have like really good warm-ups and different things to kind of train your voice and to strengthen your voice and stuff like that. Is really it works so well, and so I highly recommend that kind of stuff too. And just make sure you get it from a you know, reliable source, of course, because there are different schools of thought out there, and some of these, for example, you know, you alluded to the singing thing. I do a little bit of singing or whatever. There are some techniques out there that are not so good, you know, when it comes to that. So you have to make sure you pick things that are going to work for you and that feel comfortable and, you know, and healthy.
Yeah. Actually, I was just going to say that I've heard that singing is a good way to warm up your voice.
Mm-hmm.
But then I think for example, whispering is the worst thing you can do for your voice.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
So I don't know if you've heard those, and do you agree singing is a good way to warm up your voice?
I think so, yeah. If you're comfortable doing that, and you can kind of, you know, just kind of do light scales. You know, if you're musical at all, then yeah, it's great, because singing is actually a lot easier on the voice than talking is, and I think that's a great way to warm up. And you know, it's just a matter of doing something and kind of warming up your vocal cords, and also, you know, the whole mechanism, you know, your lips and everything, because when you first start, you know, at the beginning of the day, you definitely need to kind of get in that mode. So that and reading over some light copy, you know, something that's not too heavy or whatever. It's just a matter of just paying attention, you know, paying attention to yourself and just kind of staying consistent with stuff like that. I think it really helps a lot.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I'll add in like neck exercises and that kind of thing. I mean, I don't voice nearly as much as you, but I do have some days that are very, you know, I have a lot to do, and I get started in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And if I haven't done any stretches or anything like that, I notice after like 60 seconds, my neck starts to hurt.
Yeah, you need to get what I have a personal masseuse. Actually, she's working on me right now. You need to get one of those.
Nice.
And they're always there for you. You know, it's really a good thing.
All right. Oh, actually, that's the most useful piece of advice yet.
No, I'm just kidding. That would be nice, though, actually.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's actually the only reason I play poker, is because they have masseuses walking around the casino. That's the only reason I play.
There you
go.
It's
a very expensive
right
massage.
But, awesome.
Before I get into your production side, which I do want to talk about, rates. This comes up a lot, mm-hmm. and it's I'll be totally honest. I didn't know you were without representation. I thought you had some. So all of this, all the financial stuff, you also have to deal with. You know, as far as setting your rates, dealing with collecting and all that. But you have a client, let's even say a radio station comes to you and they're like, hey man, we love your voice, we want to get some custom reads from you here. And how do you go about figuring, you know, do you have a rate card? Do you get real loose with the different, you know, with the amounts you might charge, or, you know, do you try and figure out budgets? How do you go about that, especially with the introductory emails?
Well, I try to be, you know, as consistent as possible. And you know, like I said, I've been doing it for a long time. So I have a lot of references out there in terms of, you know, market value of the service or whatever. So I try to be consistent with that. And over the years, you kind of formulate what you're worth and what's reasonable. And I try to be fair about it as well. You know, I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to price gouge people, of course, but you know, and I do, you know, since I, that's another good thing about, you know, running your own company and being your own, you know, your own agent, so to speak, is you can have some flexibility there and you can work with people and make things happen that otherwise may not happen.
Let me jump in. You know, there was a conversation a while ago I saw, and, you know, do you basically say, look, this is how much I charge now, what do you think? Or do you try and figure out, you know, let's say you have a station that's in a rather small market, you know, you don't know what they're going to come to the table with and you're interested in doing the work. Do you try and figure out what they're bringing to the table first? Or are you the kind of guy that thinks, nope, having a rate card, you know, is more important? Which side of that fence do you stand on?
I can tell you're a poker player there. You're like, do you play your cards or do you wait for them to play their cards?
Exactly. Or in a boxing term, are you a counterpuncher or are you a boxer? You know.
Yeah, exactly. It just kind of depends on the client, you know. In some of the, you know, some of the non-ranked markets, I'll ask them, like, you know, what kind of what are you thinking or whatever. And it's a conversation. Yeah. It's a conversation that you have, and you just kind of work out the details. And again, I like the communication factor there. I like that part of it. And, you know, so I don't mind discussing things and trying to put together what's best for them. But again, I always try to make sure it's fair for them and it's fair for me as the voice talent too. And it just takes, I just really believe it takes time and experience to kind of learn what your value is, you know?
And on the production side now, you mentioned you have some people that do the production for you. You still dabble. Would you say there's a large amount or not even large, but, a good amount of clients you have that you voice for that are also getting production from you and that you might be farming out? Or is that just kind of a rare thing?
There are quite a good number of clients that go for production and the voiceover stuff together, you know.
As far as imaging, right? Are we talking imaging?
Yeah, just in terms of radio imaging, yeah. Yep. Yeah. And in terms of...
How do you handle that? Have you found, you know, younger producers out there that you give the work to, or are you doing a lot of it yourself?
I still do some myself, and I do have some producers that I work with too. Just kind of depends on the client, depends on the project, depends on the style of production and the strengths of that person. So,
yeah.
But I, you know, when I worked in radio, like imaging production, that was my thing, man. You know, when I first got into radio, yeah. I was kind of thinking I want to do a morning show, and I was wrong about that. And I have so much respect for people that do morning shows in radio. I can't even begin to explain. Yep. That is an incredible job to be good at, for these people to do it for, you know, 4 hours a day. But for me, it turned out I was more interested in, you know, I was more of a studio geek and more kind of into those details. So I love doing imaging production. And for years, I would just sit and experiment, you know, just like most imaging producers probably have done, you know, just kind of experiment with sounds and stuff like that. So I still really like doing that. But again, you know, if you're busy on the voiceover end, I really want to focus on that as much as possible, you know, because that's the number one thing now. So I have to kind of stay focused. But yeah, I do farm out some of the production to a couple of people that I've been working with for years and know them really well and respect their work. And, you know, so that kind of works out well, too.
Yeah, that seems like, you know, it's a good, some people do it that way. Mm-hmm. As far as barter, are you on any of that side of the business? Have you had anybody want you to, you know, to sell yourself?
Yeah, good question. I've had a couple of people approach me about that, but I have not. I haven't really crossed that threshold yet. So, I it's something I would consider, but I haven't really done a lot of research on it, so I can't really give you a lot of information on that particular subject. But I know that, you know, a lot of people do that, and it, you know, works well for them. So possibly.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. No. Yeah. Going the gamut here.
Yeah.
So you mentioned music before, and I think the other day we were emailing, and you dropped a line like, "Oh, I just cut a new record" or something like that. Are you, you know, producing music? Is it, you know, everything you playing the instruments and singing and everything?
Well, I'll tell you the in terms of my own music production, I started doing music, like I said earlier, a long time ago, like doing hip hop music and producing and, you know, kind of got into it from that angle, you know, a long time ago. But back in, I'm going to guess the year here, but I'm thinking like back around 97, 98, I sent a demo to Mr. Joe Kelly of AV Deli.
Mm-hmm. And Joe, past guest on the podcast.
I heard that and loved every minute of it, man. Joe is awesome. And I sent him a demo along. I just fired it off, you know, via email. I'm like, here's some music beds I did. And I've heard your work and respect your work. And I knew him as a voiceover guy. And you know, it's the genius behind AV Deli. And so he actually responded right back and said, hey, let's do this. And so he hired me to do, over the years, you know, probably I would guess like 1,000 or so music beds for AV Deli packages. So they're all over the place, and you know, they're out there being used in imaging still today. But so I did a lot of music beds from Joe. And also another thing, kind of touching on what we were talking about earlier, you're talking about finding like coaches and people to help you. Joe is one of these people who, like, after we established a friendship and a relationship, he helped me so much, like just in terms of like business, you know, in terms of the business model and advice. And if you can find somebody, if you're getting into voiceovers and you can find somebody like that, they can save you years of mistakes. And that's, mm-hmm. that's a, you know, Joe really, really made a big difference for me back then. And he's been a good friend over the years too. So I'm extremely grateful for that. But to get back to what you're asking me about the song, this is kind of a funny story because it kind of ties into voiceover as well. It's so weird how things all kind of come back to that. A producer in Dubai sent out an audition on one of the voice websites and one of the voiceover websites. And he said, I'm looking for a singer. And I was like, oh, this is kind of a weird place to be looking, but I guess, you know, whatever. And so I did a little demo for him and he liked it. And so we started working on this song together. And for me, you know, going into this project, I was just like, if I can just do a cool song, you know, that's a hobby. It's fun. You know, it'd be something I'd be proud of or whatever. And it turned out the song turned out pretty good. And he started shopping the song around and got a guy who's pretty well known. And the song is a progressive trance song. It's kind of like a club track. And he hired Michael Cassette, who's pretty well known in that genre of music, to do a remix of the track and then sent it to record labels. And we got picked up by Arista Audio in Miami shortly after that. So needless to say, I was completely shocked because honestly, like going into it, I was like, if I can just do the song justice, because I'm not a great singer, you know, and I'm never going to be. It's just a fun thing to do. And I'm pretty creative, you know, and I love, you know, working on things like challenging projects like that. And so it turned out. Really well. We got a little, you know, deal from them and they put it out. And so it's getting some exposure and some play in clubs and stuff like that. So it was pretty cool.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it's a cool experience, man.
Who was the artist you said picked it up?
The artist, I
cut out there in the middle.
That's okay. The artist that did the remix, there are like 3 or 4 different remixes of the song. But the artist that did the remix that I was referring to is Michael Cassette. And he's been doing progressive trance for a long time. So he's a well-known, you know, in Europe and, you know, kind of in the progressive trance circuit, even though that's a niche, you know, inside of a niche. But he's this guy's incredibly talented. He did a really good job kind of making the song even better, you know, and so that really helped kind of get it out there.
So I knew nothing about it before we started talking now. Is this something like, you know, if I was like a club guy, I would absolutely know it. Or, I mean, is it at least out there online everywhere? Like, I could go grab it on YouTube or something right now?
Yeah, it's on. The song is called Take Over My Soul. And the other two artists I worked with on the song, Aji Monaya is one of the artists, and then Ninesh Babu, and then Michael Cassette. And then I wrote the vocals and sang the vocals or whatever. But it's called Take Over My Soul. It's on YouTube. You can buy it from iTunes. You can buy it from Beatport. And it's on Amazon. So it's pretty much everywhere.
Nice, man. Well, I'm glad I brought that up then.
Thanks.
I'll find it and post it and make sure people know how to get to it. That'll be another cool thing to hear.
I appreciate that.
Right on, John. I'm sure you've got work to do. Everybody I talk to, I could keep talking to. You know, I could just keep talking about this business.
Yeah.
I appreciate it so much. I will ask you, although you may have already answered this at some point, because I just kept dragging advice out of you this whole time.
No, that's okay.
You know, give us, we'll talk about this in the world of voiceover and, you know, for those that are maybe more starting out, but give us the one, if you're going to break down everything you just said, the one most important key piece of advice that they should heed while starting out their voiceover career.
Wow. That's
yeah,
a, that's
right.
A
an easy one to end it
that
up.
That is a doozy. the best advice I can give is you got to absolutely love it and you've got to want it to badly to be successful, in my opinion. So it has to be a passion. It has to be something that you're just extremely motivated to do and to learn from and to get better at. So I think that's the best one piece of advice, and just, you know, always be seeking information and learning and you know, reach out to people and just try to be your very best. But you really, really have, a lot of people kind of want to fall back on it, and there's nothing wrong with that, but it takes time. It's a real commitment, you know, and it takes years to grow. And so you just really, really have to be passionate about it.
Awesome, man. Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure I'll be listening to this episode back a couple times.
No, thanks.
I think, if anything, you're going to give people a spark, you know, to work harder, you know, always work harder, and to take kind of your model. You know, you can do it yourself. You can be successful. You can be the big time like John Carter. So, John, thank you so much for being on the podcast, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ryan. I really appreciate it, man. I'm a big fan of your podcast. The producers.
One more time, thanks to John. John Carter, everybody. MegahertzStudios.com is where you can go see, hear, smell, experience all that is John Carter. And let's see here. I guess to make the outro real quick, Cousin Deke coming up next. Hopefully that'll be not live. I almost said live. An in-color, in-studio, we can actually see each other interview. We'll get that one worked out in the very near future. I have a whole big list of guests that I contact to get on the show. There's a handful of people I've already talked to. I honestly can't remember if I mentioned this in the intro. I'll mention it again. I just reached out to a guy who I've been interested in chatting with. Dermot. Oh, gosh. What's his last name? O'Neill. Dermot O'Neill. Sorry, Dermot. Going to do a blog feature on him very soon. I've already sent him questions. Going to do an interview on the blog. And he's somebody I'll put on a podcast down the road after I sift through some of these guests. There's so many great pieces of talent out there to feature. Also, I didn't actually make another mention of it. I talked about it in depth in the beginning. But the show notes page for John Carter is jam-packed with cool stuff, including the song he mentioned in the episode. I have the full-length version right at the top of the show notes page if you'd like to listen to it. And don't forget, if you want to get your hands on John Carter's Megahertz Studios beds, he produces a lot of great production music. I got them a long time ago. Reach out to him. Just go to his website, megahertzstudios.com. Otherwise, I believe that should do it for me, shan't it? It should. Until next time, bye.
This is The Producers. Have a question, comment, or concern? Email Ryan at ryanontheradio.com. The Producers. Thanks for listening.